Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi, Herman and Corin. So we talked a little bit the last day about standardization. And I mentioned that in my work with financial data, which was some work I've done for a client in the world of impact investing. And we were looking at these different data sets for financial instruments. And they were denominated in different currencies. In order to work with the data to make it comparable, I have to make sure that the data was, the countries and the currencies were standardized and comparable. And this is something, this is really, I guess, a basic data cleaning task that anyone who's worked with this kind of data has probably encountered before. I mentioned that some people decide they're gonna, you know, in their CSV or in their spreadsheet, they're gonna call it US. The next person's gonna call it USD. The third one's going to call this US dollars or dollar. And you say, wait, which dollar are we talking about? There's many dollars. So the beauty of these, of standardization and the work that the ISO does is to define standards for things like this. That we say the US dollar has the three, its three alpha identifier is USD. Its 2-1 is US. And there's no, that there's an end to arguments about it. And the other useful thing is that that can be the basis for comparability, where you have all these, as I said, it's a fairly easy Python task in data cleaning, and you probably can do it without any code these days, to say, okay, this is kind of all over the place, but, you know, you as a human can eyeball it and figure out what currencies were what, and then just, you know, add the standard identifiers. So my question only, the only question I have about this process is that for the purpose of identifying countries, it's kind of a political consideration. When you look at the ISO values for countries, you know, I can easily see some states are in it's as much a pragmatical one as it is to an extent a political one. And it might seem like a very obscure topic, these identifiers, these ISO, I can't remember off the top of my head. I think it's 4277 maybe for currencies, but they have numeric identifiers like this. Herman Poppleberry can correct me. And they really are very, very influential because those standard codes are what gets used, you know, throughout the world of banking. When we're defining top-level domains, TLDs, there's ISO standards for a vast amount of things. So other than the fact that it's based appropriately in Switzerland, I don't know all that much about the organization and this process of who comes up with who agrees upon if there's a new country that's partially recognized. Somaliland has been in the news lately, just recognized by Israel. Who sits down and agrees, do we give them an identifier? And is SML okay with them? Or, you know, should we go with something else? How does the whole process work of the international community collaborating upon these very basic standardizations? And we could, of course, talk about many, many more ISO standards. But just these kind of two very basic ones that are extraordinarily useful. What's the process of updating, maintaining, and agreeing upon them like? Over to you, Herman and Corin. Let's talk today about ISO standards for country codes and currencies.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corn, and I am sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem with my brother, the man who probably has the ISO 3166 country codes memorized in alphabetical order.
Herman Poppleberry at your service, and for the record, Corn, I only have the Alpha 2 codes memorized. The Alpha 3 codes are a bit more of a weekend project. But you are right, this is exactly the kind of thing that gets me excited. Our housemate Daniel sent us a really interesting audio prompt today. He has been doing some work with financial data and impact investing, and he ran into that classic nightmare of messy data. You know the one where one person writes US, another writes USD, another writes USD, another writes United States, and suddenly your database thinks you are dealing with four different planets.
It is the bane of any data scientist's existence. But Daniel's question goes way beyond just the annoyance of cleaning a spreadsheet. He is asking about the machinery behind these standards. Specifically, how does the International Organization for Standardization, or ISO, decide who gets a code and who doesn't? And more importantly, how do they handle the political landmines when a new country or a disputed territory enters the conversation?
It is a fascinating intersection of cold, hard technical logic and extremely messy global politics. We often think of standards as these objective, scientific truths, like the length of a meter or the weight of a kilogram. But country codes and currency identifiers are deeply tied to sovereignty, recognition, and international law. When you assign a two-letter code to a place, you're essentially giving it a digital identity that the entire world's banking, shipping, and internet systems rely on.
Right, and that is not a neutral act. So, Herman, let's start with the basics. When we talk about country codes, we are usually talking about ISO 3166. Can you break down how that standard is actually structured? Because it is not just one list, right?
Exactly. ISO 3166 is actually divided into three parts. Part 1 is the most famous one, which covers the names of countries and their subdivisions. This is where you get your two-letter codes, like IL for Israel or US for the United States. Those are called Alpha 2 codes. Then you have the Alpha 3 codes, which are three letters, like ISR or USA. And finally, there are numeric codes, which are useful for systems that don't handle Latin characters well.
And Part 2 and 3.
Part 2 covers the subdivisions of those countries. Think of state codes like US-CA for California. Part 3 is actually for formerly used country names. So if a country changes its name or ceases to exist, like the Soviet Union or Czechoslovakia, the code moves to Part 3 so that historical data can still be processed correctly.
Okay, so that is the what. But let's get to the how that Daniel was asking about. Who actually sits in a room and decides that a new country gets a code? Is there an ISO secret society meeting in a hollowed-out volcano in Switzerland?
Not quite a volcano, though they are based in Geneva. The crucial thing to understand is that ISO doesn't actually decide who is a country. They are a standards body, not a political one. To avoid getting bogged down in endless diplomatic wars, they tether themselves to the United Nations. Specifically, the ISO 3166 Maintenance Agency, or the MA, follows the lead of the United Nations.
So, if the UN says you are a country, ISO gives you a code?
Essentially, yes. They look at the United Nations Terminology Bulletin on Country Names, or the country and region codes used for statistical purposes by the United Nations Statistics Division. If a new state is admitted to the UN, they get a code almost immediately. But here is where it gets tricky, and this gets to Daniel's point about political considerations. What about places that are not full UN members?
Right, and this is incredibly timely. Just 2 weeks ago, on December 26, 2025, Israel became the first country to officially recognize Somaliland as a sovereign state. We just saw the Israeli Foreign Minister, Gideon Sa'ar, visiting Hargeisa. Now, Somaliland has been functioning as a state for over 30 years, but they don't have a UN seat. Does Israel's recognition mean they finally get an ISO code?
That is the million-dollar question, and the answer is, not yet. Because the ISOMA is tethered to the UN's list, a single country's recognition, even a high-profile one like Israel's, doesn't trigger an automatic code. The UN still considers Somaliland part of Somalia. Until the UN Secretariat updates its terminology bulletin or the Statistics Division changes its stance, Somaliland remains in a digital limbo.
That feels like a very delicate balancing act. You are providing the technical utility while trying to maintain political neutrality, or at least following the specific flavor of neutrality that the UN provides. But what about the exceptionally reserved codes? I remember seeing EU on some lists.
That is a perfect example. The European Union is not a country, but it has a massive presence in international trade, so the code EU is exceptionally reserved. It isn't part of the main list of countries, but it is set aside so that no one else can use it, and it can be used in specific contexts like the Eurozone's financial reporting. The same goes for codes like UK. Technically, the ISO code for the United Kingdom is GB for Great Britain and Northern Ireland, but UK is exceptionally reserved because so many people kept using it anyway that they had to make sure it didn't get assigned to some future country named, I don't know, Upper Kazakhstan.
I love that. Even in the world of high-level international standards, sometimes you just have to give in to the fact that everyone is using the wrong acronym. But let's pivot to currencies for a second, because that is what Daniel was specifically dealing with in his financial data. That is ISO 4217, right?
Correct. ISO 4217 is the standard for currency codes, and there is a very neat logic to how these are formed, which most people don't realize. In most cases, the three-letter currency code is just the two-letter country code from ISO 3166 plus the first letter of the currency name. So, the United States is US, the currency is the dollar, so you get USD. Japan is JP, the currency is the yen, so you get JPY.
Wait, so what about the euro, EUR? If EU isn't a country code in the main list, how does that work?
The euro is the exception that proves the rule. Since it is a multinational currency, they used that exceptionally reserved EU code we just talked about and added the R from euro. But there are even weirder ones. Think about gold or silver. If you are a bank and you are holding physical gold, you need a code for that in your system.
Oh, I've seen these. They start with an X, right?
Exactly. The letter X is reserved for currencies that are not tied to a specific country, so gold is XAU. The AU is from the chemical symbol for gold, aurum. Silver is XAG. And then you have XTS, which is reserved for testing. If you are a developer building a new payment system, and you don't want to accidentally send $1 billion to a test account, you use XTS.
That is such a practical detail. It reminds me of how we talked about private IP address ranges in episode 286. It is a sandbox within the standard. But let's go back to the maintenance aspect. How often do these lists actually change? It feels like countries don't just pop up every day.
You would be surprised. It is more frequent than you think, but it is not just about new countries, it is about name changes. Recently, the country formerly known as Turkey officially requested that the international community use the name Turkey. That required an update to the ISO standard. Or look at what happened when South Sudan became independent in 2011. They had to be added to ISO 3166 with the code SS, and then the currency standard had to be updated to include the South Sudanese pound, which is SSP.
And what happens to the old codes? Like when the Netherlands Antilles was dissolved in 2010, does the code just vanish?
No, that would break every legacy database on Earth. This is where part 3 of the standard comes in. The code AN for the Netherlands Antilles was deleted from the active list and moved to the formerly used list. It is essentially retired, like a jersey number in sports. It won't be reassigned to a new country for at least 50 years to prevent confusion in historical records.
That 50-year rule is interesting. It shows they are thinking in terms of data decades. But I want to push on the political side again. Daniel mentioned Somaliland. If Israel recognizes Somaliland and starts trading with them using a specific currency, but the UN doesn't recognize them, we are in a stalemate, right? The ISO won't give them a code, but businesses might need one. What do people do in that situation?
That is where we see the user-assigned codes. Both ISO 3166 and 4217 have ranges of codes that are intentionally left blank for private use. In the country codes, these are the ranges starting with AA, then QM to QZ, XA to XZ, and ZZ.
So a company could internally decide that XSL stands for Somaliland.
Exactly. Or a group of regional banks could agree on a private code to facilitate trade. But the problem is that these aren't universal. If Bank A uses XSL for Somaliland and Bank B uses it for secret location, you have a data collision. This is why the official ISO code is so powerful. It is the only way to ensure that everyone in the world is speaking the same language. Without it, you are back to Daniel's problem of, is it US or USD or United States, but on a global, catastrophic scale?
It is almost like the ISO is the high priest of global consensus. They don't create the reality, but they are the ones who officially record it so that the machines can understand it. But what about when a currency fails, like the Zimbabwean dollar? How does the standard reflect a currency that is essentially worthless?
The standard doesn't care about the value, only the existence. But Zimbabwe is actually the perfect case study for maintenance. In April 2024, they introduced a new gold-backed currency called the Zimbabwe Gold, or ZIG. The ISO maintenance agency issued it the new code ZWG. This replaced the old ZWL. If you look at the history, they've gone from ZWD to ZWL. If you look at the history, they've gone from ZWD to ZWL, and now ZWG. Each time, the MA issues a new code so that financial systems can distinguish between the old money and the new money.
That must be a nightmare for accountants. Wait, was this debt in ZWR or ZWG? But it really highlights why specificity matters. If you just kept the code the same, you could never do historical comparisons. You would be comparing apples to, well, apples that have been through a wood chipper.
That is a great analogy. And it actually brings up a point about who runs the currency side. While the country codes are managed directly by an ISO committee, the currency codes in ISO 4002 and 17 are actually managed by a maintenance agency on behalf of ISO. For many years, that has been SIX Interbank Clearing, based in Switzerland.
Wait, so a private company manages the world's currency codes?
It is a non-profit organization that operates the Swiss Interbank Clearing System. They have the technical expertise to handle the rapid changes that financial markets require. It is a very pragmatic arrangement. They work with central banks and the International Monetary Fund to make sure that whenever a new currency is launched or an old one is retired, the rest of the world knows within days.
This whole system feels so robust, yet so fragile, because it relies on everyone agreeing to follow the rules. But I'm thinking about the digital future. We are in early 2026 now. Central bank digital currencies, or CBDCs, are becoming a real thing. How does the ISO handle a digital version of the yuan or the dollar?
That is the million-dollar question. Currently, most central banks want their digital currency to be seen as the same legal tender as their physical currency. So the digital euro is still EUR. However, there is a lot of discussion in the ISO technical committees about whether we need new identifiers for the specific flavor of the money. If a digital currency has different settlement rules or technical limitations, a database might need to know that.
And what about things that aren't central bank controlled? I'm not just talking about Bitcoin, but things like carbon credits. If I'm trading carbon credits globally, I need a standardized way to identify them, right?
Funny you should mention that. There is actually a standard for that too, ISO 24165, which deals with digital token identifiers, or DTIs. It was just updated in 2025 to include non-fungible tokens and to separate the token identifier from the ledger identifier. It provides a unique 9-character alphanumeric code for crypto assets. It is ISO's attempt to bring the same level of boring, reliable order to the Wild West of crypto that they brought to shipping containers and country codes.
Boring, reliable order. That should be the ISO's unofficial motto. But Herman, let's talk about the actual process of an update. If I'm a developer and I want the latest list of country codes, where do I go? Is there an API? Or do I have to buy a PDF for $300?
This is a point of contention in the standards world. Traditionally, ISO makes a lot of its money selling the documentation for standards. But for something as fundamental as country codes, they realized that if they charged too much, people would just use pirated or outdated lists, which defeats the purpose of a standard. So, while the full technical documentation might cost money, the actual lists of codes are generally available through the ISO online browsing platform.
But even then, as Daniel found out, it's not always easy to integrate. If you are building a system today, you can't just hard code a list of 249 countries and call it a day. You have to assume that list will change.
Exactly. And that is the biggest takeaway for anyone working with this data. Never assume the map is static. In the last few years, we have seen Swaziland change to Eswatini. Now, they requested a code change to EZ, but the ISOMA actually kept the code as SSZ to maintain stability. If you had manually changed it to EZ in your database because you saw the name change, you would have broken your connection to every other ISO compliance system.
So what is the best practice? Do you just sync with the ISO database every night?
For most people, that is overkill. But you should use a library or a service that tracks these changes. Most modern programming languages have packages that are maintained by the community to follow the ISO standards. The real danger is when you start making up your own codes. I've seen companies use UK for United Kingdom in their internal database, then they try to merge that with a shipping provider that uses GB, and suddenly half their packages are lost in a digital void.
It is the not invented here syndrome, but for geography. It is so tempting to just say, oh, I'll just use these two letters, but you are creating a ticking bomb for the person who has to maintain that system 5 years from now.
And it's not just about the letters. The numeric codes are actually the most stable. If a country changes its name, the numeric code usually stays the same unless the borders change significantly. So for deep database architecture, numeric codes are often the source of truth, while the letters are just the display name for us humans.
That is a great tip. So, if you were building for the long haul, think in numbers, even if you show the letters to the users. But Herman, I want to circle back to the political nuance one more time. We talked about Somaliland and Taiwan. What about cases where a country is recognized by some but not all? Like Palestine?
Palestine is a fascinating case in the ISO world. They have the Alpha 2 code PS and the Alpha 3 code PSE. They were added to the standard in the late 90s after the Oslo Accords, following the UN's recognition of the Palestinian Authority as a non-member observer state. This is a perfect example of how the ISO uses the UN as its shield. Because the UN gave them a specific status, ISO could assign a code without taking a side in the way a single country might.
It's like the ISO is saying, don't look at us, we're just following the UN seating chart. But that seating chart has real-world consequences. If you have an ISO code, you can get a top-level domain on the internet. You can have a .ps or a .tw.
Exactly. The Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, or ICANN, which manages the DNS system, almost exclusively uses the ISO 3166 list to decide which countries get a two-letter country code top-level domain. No ISO code, no dot something for your country. This is one of the reasons why unrecognized states fight so hard for an ISO code. It is a prerequisite for a digital flag.
That is a huge second-order effect. It's not just about a spreadsheet in a bank. It's about your entire identity on the internet. If Somaliland can't get an ISO code, they can't have a .sl or whatever they might want. They are forced to live under someone else's digital domain.
And that brings up the issue of digital dependency. If you are a territory that is not fully recognized, you are often forced to use the infrastructure of the country you are trying to separate from, or you use a generic top-level domain like .com or .org. But those don't give you the same official feel as a country code domain.
It's amazing how much power is packed into two little letters. We've talked about the what and the how, but I'm curious about the who. Who are the people on this maintenance agency? Is it a group of geographers, diplomats, computer scientists?
It's a mix. The ISO 3166 maintenance agency consists of representatives from 10 organizations. 5 are national standards bodies, like ANSI from the United States or DIN from Germany. The other 5 are major international organizations, the UN, the International Telecommunication Union, the Universal Postal Union, the International Civil Aviation Organization, and the Internet Society.
That is a heavy-hitting lineup. You've got the people who handle the mail, the people who handle the planes, and the people who handle the internet.
Because those are the 3 groups that absolutely cannot afford to have a mix-up about where a country is or what it's called. If the Postal Union thinks a code means one thing, and the aviation organization thinks it means another, planes land in the wrong place and mail gets lost. The ISO standard is the glue that holds all those different global systems together.
It's the ultimate boring technology that makes the exciting stuff possible. You can't have global travel or global trade without a shared understanding of the map. So, Herman, if you had to give Daniel one piece of advice for his financial data project, based on everything we've discussed, what would it be?
I would say, respect the retired codes. Daniel was talking about cleaning data. A lot of times, people see an old code like AN for the Netherlands Antilles, and they think, oh, that's an error, let me change it to the modern code. But if that financial instrument was issued in 2008, it was issued in the Netherlands Antilles. If you change the code, you are actually changing the historical fact. You have to build your systems to understand that the world of 2008 had a different map than the world of 2026.
That is a profound point. Data cleaning isn't just about making everything look the same. It's about making sure the data accurately reflects the reality of the time it was recorded. You are not just a data cleaner. You are a digital historian.
I like that. Herman Poppleberry, digital historian. It has a nice ring to it.
We might have to update your business cards. But before we wrap up, I want to touch on one more thing. We've been talking about countries and currencies as these distinct things. But what about the cases where they overlap in weird ways, like the US dollar being the official currency in countries other than the US?
Right, like Ecuador or El Salvador. This is where the ISO 4217 standard is very clear. It doesn't say one country, one currency. It lists which currencies are legal tender in which territories. So if you look up Ecuador in the ISO currency list, it will tell you that the currency is USD. The standard is descriptive, not prescriptive. It doesn't say Ecuador should use the dollar. It says they Ecuador should use the dollar. It says they Ecuador use the dollar.
That descriptive nature is probably what keeps the ISO out of even more trouble. They are just reporters. We're just reporting that these people are using this money. It's a very Swiss way of looking at the world.
Very neutral, very precise. And speaking of precision, I should mention that there are also codes for no currency. If you are looking at a territory that doesn't have a functional economy or uses a barter system, there is a code for that, triple X.
Wait, really? The code for no currency is triple X?
Yes. It is used in ISO 4217 to signify that no currency is involved in a transaction. It's another one of those X codes for non-country entities. It's actually quite common in certain types of international shipping or customs forms where the value isn't denominated in money.
I'm never going to look at a customs form the same way again. Triple X. Oh, they're just bartering for these goats.
Exactly. Or it's a non-commercial sample. But it just goes to show that the people who design these standards try to think of every single edge case. They have a code for gold, they have a code for testing, they have a code for no money at all, and they have a code for the euro, even though the euro doesn't have a single country.
It's a masterpiece of administrative architecture. It's not flashy, but it's the reason you can swipe your credit card in a different country and have it work in milliseconds. The bank in Jerusalem knows exactly what a USD is, and the bank in New York knows exactly what an ILS is, because they both read the same ISO 4217 update from SIX Interbank Clearing.
It's the silent language of the global economy, and honestly, the more I learn about it, the more I appreciate the people who sit in those rooms in Geneva and debate whether a semicolon should be a comma. They are the ones preventing the world from devolving into a giant pile of US versus USD spreadsheets.
Well, I think we have sufficiently geeked out on ISO standards for one day. Daniel, I hope that helps you with your financial data cleaning. Just remember, use the numeric codes for the database, respect the retired codes for the history, and never ever try to make up your own two-letter acronym for a country unless you want to spend the rest of your life fixing data collisions.
Wise words, Korn. And hey, if any of our listeners have ever run into a particularly weird ISO code or had a data nightmare of their own, we want to hear about it. Go to myweirdprompts.com and use the contact form to tell us your story. Or better yet, send us an audio prompt like Daniel did. We love diving into these rabbit holes.
And if you are enjoying the show, please take a second to leave us a review on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps the show reach more people who share our weird curiosity about the world's hidden systems.
It really does. We've seen a lot of new listeners lately, and it's all thanks to those reviews. So, thank you.
All right, that's it for episode 2088. I'm Korn.
And I'm Herman Poppleberry.
Thanks for listening to My Weird Prompts. We'll see you next week, where we might just talk about something even more obscure than country codes.
Is that even possible?
Oh, you know it is. Bye, everyone.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.